Is Director Jerminski. Director Jerminski, if you, I mean, it wasn't recorded, I'm gonna start over. Let's begin the homeopathic board meeting for March 12th, 2024. Who's decided to screw up the meeting this morning? Were we taking turns? It was my turn earlier. One, two, 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 three, two.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's try take three. Let's call to order the homeopathic board meeting for March 12th, 2024 at 9 a.m. As always, first order on the agenda is the roll call and recognition of board members. Director Jerminski, do you have the roll? Can you help us out here?
Absolutely, President Fontes, board members. For the record, this is David Jerminski, the board's executive director in attendance. We also have Richard Graham, our licensing coordinator, and Jeannie Galvin, our assistant attorney general. Calling roll for the board, board member Lim, are you present?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So board member Lim, you're logging in present.
Yeah, I'm not logging present.
Board member Les.
Present.
Board member Klein will not be present today. Board member Hobick.
Present.
And President Fontes.
I'm present. Okay, we got agenda item two rolling. Let's go to number three. Are there any declarations of conflicts of interest this morning? Hearing none, moving to agenda item number four, review, discussion, and possible action regarding statute and rules changes. So this is the main item for today. So it should be a short meeting, but productive. Director Jerminski, can you keep us up to date here?
Absolutely. If we want to start with our statute changes, Senate Bill 1163, which was sent out to the board. This is the bill that has been kind of bouncing around for the past few years for the homeopathic practitioners. We've been working with Pima College and with the association in order to get this bill moving forward this year. We've been to the Senate at the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, was heard there, received a due pass recommendation, and then was passed out of the Senate as a body. And now we're being sent to the House for this bill for them to review it. That'll go before the it'll go before committee in the House. Once we get out of committee there, it'll get voted on in the full House itself and then get sent to the governor for approval. And so just as a overview, what this board does is a few things. What this bill does is a few things. One is it defines approved training programs for homeopathic practitioners. It removes one of our board officers so that we just have a president and vice president instead of the additional office of a secretary treasurer. It also kind of codifies a relationship between the acupuncture board and the homeopathy board by simply stating that the boards share an executive director.
This is not, this is President Fontes. So this is not a combining of the boards. This is just a formality that Director Jerminski serves as director on both boards. And we did this maybe 5 years ago, so in order to basically balance the budget sheet for the homeopathic board to be able to continue to be solvent. And similarly, that this legislation, should it pass, and I would say, is it safe to say we're 2/3 of the way there?
I would say we are a little over halfway.
Yeah. A little over halfway there. So there's, you know, it's been over a decade in the making, but should this go through, this will primarily serve to ensure that citizens, the board is overseeing homeopathic practitioners in the state of Arizona and allowing a path to licensure for those who qualify. This will in turn increase revenues of the board so we can remain solvent and in moving forward in a healthy way into the future. And David, or Director Derminski, has been doing a lot of footwork, and we've had a lot of meetings in the past few months. So this has really been, my personal challenge for over the past decade, you know, at least a dozen years since this has started. So should this happen, this will be monumental for the homeopathic physicians and licensees, and the public will be ensured access to homeopathy for future generations. So, you know, the fact is that our licensees are aging, and we would like to see that, you know, we leave a legacy for those who want to continue the practice of homeopathy into the future. Okay, that's enough out of me. Continue.
All right, absolutely, and that was a great summary of what this does. You know, it's allowing a different educational pathway to get the homeopathic practitioner's license than currently exists. And so, people who have a license already as a chiropractor, a physical therapist, a acupuncturist, they've received medical training in the U.S. Armed Forces. And so on, we'll be able to get additional homeopathic training and then receive a license with this board.
So, do we have any known opposition at this point?
Nothing that's raised its head at this point.
However, historically, it has been the House where opposition was presented.
Well, I would say that the House is definitely a more active environment than the Senate is, as far as debate and opposition and so on. However, I really don't. You know, we removed the integrative language from the bill, and so I think that kind of resolves some of those issues. And I foresee this kind of going through without a lot of heartburn.
And lobbyist Shannon, is she on the same page with that, as far as you know?
That's my understanding. And so Shannon is a lobbyist for the Peoria Institute for Herbal Medicine and Acupuncture, and that she's not the board's lobbyist, obviously, since we're not able to have them. So, but she's running this bill on behalf of PEMA.
Okay. And then the House, for the board members who have the luxury of attending, can you share the House meeting and deliberation date on this?
So my understanding is that this will be on March 20th, next month, or next week, Wednesday, and that should be at 2:00. However, the date and time isn't finalized. So once I know, a specific date and time for that committee meeting, I'd be happy to forward that to the board.
All right. I plan on being there. Is anybody, are there any other board members who have an interest or plan on being there? All right, well, I'll be happy to represent. And, you know, if the it's not set, it's already the second time it's moved, so there's no guarantee that it will be March 20th. Mm-hmm. Well, there's probably a guarantee if they say it's at 2 o'clock that it won't be at 2 o'clock. So we'll be there, and we will be looking forward to giving you all, sharing good news with you all at the next board meeting. Maybe if there's a celebration, Director Jerminski can send a message out to the board members.
I'd be happy to do that. You're accurate. The last time when we were at the Senate, the meeting hearing was scheduled for 1 o'clock, and we weren't heard until about 9 o'clock at night. So you never quite know when you're going to be heard over there.
But I will bring my picnic basket.
Yeah. And so does anybody, does any member have any questions about that bill or the process at all?
No, it's just an exciting time to be a part of this. You know, everybody that's been involved it's been an uphill climb for over a decade. So I'm looking forward to this. And, you know, this was championed last time by Dr. Todd Rowe. And for those of you who don't know, he was the past president of this board, and he also was the president of the homeopathic school here in Arizona, which he has recently retired from. He retired last month.
Mm. All right. The other, if you're ready to move on, President Fontes, or
I am.
The other item was that there was a bill floating in the House. It was sent for hearing that would have, in essence, expired the board. We would have. Gone out of existence.
I think the proper term is squashed hopes and dreams.
So, yeah, the bill would, yeah, the bill would have completely eliminated the board. And so we were communicating with legislators and talking about the importance of patient choice and the, alternative medicines here in Arizona. Working with stakeholders, and fortunately that the hopes and dreams of that bill were squashed in that it ended up not going through committee. So,
and I'm told it was not out of animosity for the homeopathic medicine. It was just a paperwork expense cutting, is that right?
I think that the bill sponsor's intent was to, you know, just reduce government. That he had included also the dispensing opticians board, and so I think the idea was just to reduce government and, you know, remove licensing boards.
Pick off the low hanging fruit, but you know, getting this legislation passed and. Making the board more relevant with numbers going into the future should preserve the board in these instances. And I might add, there was a lot of public support for the board during this. I know that there's many of my patients and colleagues were telling me about it. So I know that there was a buzz going around. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right, and part of the reason we were able to have this bill kind of go away was that the board already had an existing relationship with the acupuncture board, where we're sharing resources and staff and so on. And so the fact that we were already doing that, kind of led to this this bill, dying on the vine, as it were. So.
I suppose if we really were forced, if we were forced to merge, it would probably be in this board's interest to merge with a board like the acupuncture board, who is sympathetic to our cause. versus the, you know, the naturopathic board or the medical board. So, but you know, we have little control over that, or yeah. None.
All right. Otherwise, you know, there are other bills that I'm, you know, just kind of keeping track of, but they're not very as specific to our board as these were. So, I think the other item for here is the rules. You know, we're have our regulatory our 5-year rule review due in April here, and so if it's okay with you, President Fontes, I'd love to just kind of go through the rules as they stand with you. You know, go through each section, and I've got some comments on areas where you know, it makes sense to make some changes. But also hear the board's feedback as to whether they feel that the rules as they are working or not working or so on.
And do you propose to do that today?
Yes.
How long will that take?
I'm not sure.
All right. Well, proceed.
Yeah. There's, how many pages here? There's 15 pages.
Okay.
So, all right. So if you have, you were sent a copy of the rules, and your materials, if you want to open that up and we can go through it together. And you know what else I'll do is, just for ease here, is for those who are on the Zoom or the Google Meets meeting, I will share my screen and you can follow along with my PDF here. So the first page is kind of an index, I guess, along with some definitions that cover, you know, beneficial clinical usage, you know, generally accepted experimental criteria, and so on and so forth. You know, I don't think I need to go through every one of these definitions, but I would ask that you read them on your own time, and if you feel that they're no longer relevant or specific to the way that medicine has moved in your profession, that you would send those notes to me so that we can talk about what the proper definition for that would be.
Is this the one with Title IV Professions, Occupations, Chapter 38 Board?
Yes.
Okay, so Article 2, Dispensing of Drugs by Homeopathic Physicians, why is that blank?
So it has definitions and general provisions, and then packaging. It has three sections that say repealed. Is that what you're saying? So those that is just the kind of the index of what's in here. It's not the actual section itself. So once we go farther down into the document, we'll get okay. to Article 2 and be able to read through those.
Okay.
And so on the right-hand side where it says Article 1 General, that's the beginning of the actual rules themselves, where it starts the definitions.
Gotcha.
Okay, so we'll go through, we'll pass through the definitions again. I'd really appreciate if you would read through those and send any notes or information that you may have as far as whether those definitions have updated or need updating. Okay, so requirements for applications, continuing down to the next page, R438-102. Applicants graduating from an unapproved school of medicine. This is for basically homeopathic physicians that came into the country from that received their medical training from out of the country. And so it basically says that they need to complete a fifth pathway program. And that I think this is pretty standard and similar to what the MD and DO boards have.
It might be helpful to read the fifth pathway program definition. Fifth pathway program means an academic program created by the Council on Medical Education of the American Medical Association specifically for American medical students studying abroad.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so this, so a person would either need to complete a fifth pathway or hold a certificate issued by the Educational Council for Foreign Medical Graduates. And so if a person obtained a medical training in, you know, France or Mexico or wherever, they could apply to that council for certification, and then the board would accept that certification to say that they had obtained a education which was at least similar to that which would have been obtained in the United States. The individual would still, however, have to complete postgraduate training for their homeopathy license. And so that is the next section, R438103, postgraduate requirements for licensure.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's actually an error in this rule. It says under ARS 322912F3, and that doesn't exist. And so it needs to read 322912G3.
Uh-oh.
and so we need to fix that so that it's accurate. The other issue is that since we're going forward with our homeopathic practitioners, none of the rules consider homeopathic practitioners at all. And so so we'll need to modify 103.1 right here where it says having a degree, so on and so forth, to simply say having completed an approved training program or the postgraduate courses.
Okay.
Or preceptorship. Okay. If anyone, no one has any questions for 103, moving on to R438104, approved postgraduate coursework. An applicant who seeks licensure based on successful completion of formal postgraduate courses shall, and then this is a list of all of the postgraduate training a licensee could take and how many hours they're required to take. As you know, they have to take 300 hours of postgraduate courses in one of these areas, and at least 40 of those 300 need to be in classical homeopathy. So I think that those hours have worked for the board for training requirements. Does anyone on the board feel like the hour requirement should be more or less than it currently is?
Historically, they needed more, but you know, the truth is we modified the exam to fit the number of hours of training. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those, all right. So it sounds like the way that we have it works.
It works. Is it ideal? No. Does it work? Yes.
Okay. Great. So the areas that a person could get postgraduate courses are, if we move down to C, it's acupuncture, chelation therapy, classical homeopathy, complex homeopathy, neuromuscular integration, or orthomolecular therapy. And in that, I think the board has approved nutrition courses as part of one of those as well.
Really?
It sounds good to me. I'm going to have to take a 15-minute break from the meeting. I've got something I have to do. I'm going to leave the phone on, though.
Okay. If that's the case, we lose quorum. We'll have to take a break for 15 minutes.
Well, okay. Well, I'm going to tell my office that I have to cancel my next patient. Then.
No, let's think about this. I thought I could probably, I just have to drop off some stuff with my accountant. All right. I'll stay on for another 15 minutes. How long will the meeting last?
I mean, at this rate, probably another 15 minutes to a half hour.
We should be done by 10.
Okay, I'll stay on.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. So those postgraduate modalities, I guess, do those sound appropriate? Are there any other ones we should add or remove from that list, do you think?
Nutrition. I mean, if we're approving it, we should have it on there.
Okay. And what kind of training requirements would you want to show for an individual having completed appropriate training? Like how many hours?
Thousand right now. What's it set at?
For nutrition, there's no number in our rules. For instance, we require 16 hours for chelation.
Can I get some time to look at programs, appropriate programs, and see what they are?
Absolutely. So we'll give Dr. Fontes, President Fontes, some homework there to look up nutrition, postgraduate courses in nutrition, what that looks like and what might be appropriate for the board. And then we'll have to have another meeting before April to finalize this. So,
okay, I will do that. Gladly.
Actually, as long as I'm thinking about it, do we have insulin potentiation therapy as part of that list?
IPT is part of.
Might have added. We have a list just because we have that issue.
If it's part of neuromuscular complex homeopathy, chelation, acupuncture, or orthomolecular.
No,
it's not part of any of that. It's different.
Okay, so we could talk about IPT.
All right, and we could look at the current licensees and their training too.
Okay. All right, I can do that. All right, are there any other modalities that would be appropriate?
Not at this time.
Okay. So again, that's one of those things that you can percolate on, and if you have items, please send them to me and email me.
Somebody had mentioned hypnosis.
Okay. Is that something that you'd like to
include? Dr. Les, is that something you want to champion?
Hypnosis? No, I don't know. But I was going to suggest that Sonoran University has a nutritional program that they give a degree.
Who?
Glory, yeah.
Can you send me that?
Yeah, I'm texting you the information, yeah. Because I think you should see what they have to offer and then maybe take a part of it. This is a two-year program.
Okay, just send me that, please.
All right, thank you. Yeah. Hypnosis, I have no idea.
Yeah, let me just comment on that. The American Society of Clinical Hypnosis is a very well-established group. They've been around since 1960. So I'm not sure about infringing upon that.
It's a society. It's not a license.
They have.
Okay. They have no license. There's no licensure in the state of Arizona for hypnosis.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I would certainly not be opposed to including 30 credits or something applicable to integrative training.
Yeah. Okay.
I certainly don't be giving out licenses for clinical hypnosis. That gets a little
right.
As part but of we could training. Include it in. We could include it as a modality that's with training.
And our licensees are already able to do clinical hypnosis. The question is whether you want to allow that as one of the training requrequirements for their education to gain the license.
You know, if you're going to do something, please let me know that you're trained in it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I am trained in hypnosis. I was a standing member for 40 years with the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. Yeah, I think it's part of integrative medicine.
And it's right here. It's right. Can you read that, Dr. Javinsky?
Yeah, our homeopathy, it says psychotherapeutic procedures, including individual or group psychotherapy, clinical hypnosis, or other behavioral health interventions subject to independent regulations in the state.
Oh, wait a minute. It shall not delegate these to a register. Why?
That's something we can talk about when we get down to that rule. But I was just going down there to ask if you know, for the education, postgraduate studies, whether you would want to say psychotherapeutic procedures, or if you'd want to say clinical hypnosis.
Let's open it up to psycho, to make it a little broader in case somebody wants to, you know, I think it's a broader topic is always better, so our licensees can have latitude.
Okay. So I will add another one here for psychotherapeutic procedures. All right, great.
And take a note that it was talking about the assistants, mm-hmm. that we want to change that language. I mean, if the assistants are doing IVs, if they can show training in hypnosis, I'm okay with that too.
All right. So we'll go to the next section, approval of preceptorships. This generally outlines how the board reviews preceptorship programs. An individual would take a preceptorship program in lieu of completing a postgraduate courses.
We have a hand raised?
I do. I just had a comment about the psycho. You scrolled on, David, so I can't see the term. That's psychotherapeutic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that we look closely at whether that would be in potential violation of the statutes regulating psychologists. Their statutes prohibit the use of the term psycho unless you are a licensed psychologist.
Well, it's been in there for decades.
Well, and I wasn't aware of that. So it might be something that David and I can discuss.
Yeah. I wonder if it's listed somewhere in our statute.
And I can look into that.
So, I mean, if we call it something different.
Yeah, we can change its name.
Our definitions are for our licensees, right? So, you know, as long as it's descriptive and appropriate, I think that's fine.
People are offended by the word psycho? Is that
it? No, it's like a derivative of the word psycho. So perhaps, you know, psychotherapy or individuals. Also,
is that their word? Is that the kind of thing?
Sort of a title protection.
Well, people have been calling me psycho for a long time, and I don't have a license.
Okay. I don't see it in our definitions here, but I'm sure we can talk about that, Jeannie, and see what can be done.
Okay. Sounds good.
So I'll put a note down there when we to talk to you. All right. Thank you for that input. The preceptorship programs, those basically outline what has to be involved in those, that the preceptorship has to be approved, that the person has to providing the preceptorship program needs to be licensed MDH or DOH. They have to have been in practice for at least 3 years. That they have training in the modalities that they're precepting and so on and so forth. It has to involve, let me see here, what does it have to include? Case taking, repertory. Materia medica, philosophy, history of homeopathy, acute remedies, constitutional prescribing, posology, homeopathic prescription policy, and remedy handling.
Wonderful. Well-rounded.
Okay. And also can include any items from our other things like orthomolecular therapy, neuromuscular integration, so on and so forth. All right. In our next section here is fees. Basically, all of our fees are maxed out to what's in the statute for rules. Just because we have so few licensees, our fees have to be this high. However, our statute allows the board, if I have it up here, but it allows the board to meet every year and set its fees, you know, at the board meeting. And so my suggestion here is just to let this section for fees expire. And then the board can evaluate fees at each meeting. Hopefully, you know, licensees start coming in and we can reduce fees over time. You know, as it is, it's a very difficult process. You know, if we allow this to expire, we can evaluate our fees every year.
Oh, nice. Yes, I'm looking forward to having increased licensure and reduced fees, because this $1,000 renewal is just it's exorbitant.
Yeah,
I get why, but I mean, one of the fallout from increasing board members will be a boom for our licensees, and maybe we can attract old licensees to come back.
Perhaps.
Well, you know, is there one for do we have that like retired but not giving up your license? You know what I'm talking about, when they're
inactive? Yeah, that would require a legislative change.
All right. I withdraw my comment then.
No, there is a situation with the Arizona Medical Board that allows you to do sort of part-time charitable work as a very minimum license. Is that something that we could look at the language of the Arizona Medical Board?
You know, once again, that would require a legislative change, not a rule change. So we're happy to look into that, but that's going to be a bigger.
Can you just itemize that for the next discussion? And, you know, it may or may not be worth it, but I'd like to just put it on the agenda.
Yeah, let's see here.
And David.
There may be a category called homeopathic emeritus or something that would allow people to teach or to lead groups or something like that. Mm-hmm. That was a little outside the real usual scope of practice.
All right. Well, let's cover that at the next board so Dr. Les can get to his next thing.
Yep.
And David, I just dropped it off. I'm fine for the rest of the meeting.
Oh, great.
David, and put on our list, please, to discuss about letting that fee rule expire and just setting the fees at an annual meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that would be meet the requirements in Title 41.
Okay. Yeah, we're not the only board that does that. I know psychology board has similar language, and they do that each year, and so on and so forth. So,
and they have a special exemption in Title 41, is my recollection.
Okay, we'll have that conversation then. Let me just. Have that. All right. Okay. So fees. So next section is examination. The rule currently talks about a two-part exam. One is the written examination, including the modalities listed above. And the second part would be a personal interview with the board. However, you know, we have two license types. And so we would, you know, we need to have two different examinations for our licensees. So the thought here is to Leave this section as is and call this examination for licensees licensed pursuant to Part A. And then for licensees for Part B, there would be a exam that only includes classical homeopathy, basically.
So about a dozen years ago, we had a more robust homeopathic section. You know, as I mentioned earlier, how we adjusted the exam. Yes, exactly. So what I would like to do is resurrect the old examination, and I would personally review it. And then maybe perhaps, since our current exam is a little weighty still on homeopathy, adjust it per percentage of questions to be appropriate for the licensee. Right. Because we've had, in the years before you were here, we've had people complain that all I want to do is chelation. Why do I have to answer all these questions about this ancient medicine that nobody uses? So my point is we could weight it out more appropriately, and then sure. Put the more bulk of the questions for the homeopathy.
Great. Yeah, I think that makes sense. I'll look into that. The other thing is allowing the practitioners just to use a CHC exam, you know, because that certainly would meet the requirement.
In talking to the potential licensees, there are a number of them who are not willing to jump through the CHC hoops, but are willing to take a written examination provided by the
So we should do an OR for that then.
Yeah.
So they can do either that or the CHC.
Yeah, I don't want to create additional bar obstacles.
Right. All right, so that sounds like we know what we're doing there for examinations. Application for licensure. This just lines up, you know, what has to be in the application itself. This the only item I had for here really was item I, to get rid of the date that they expect to take the examination. We kind of allow the applicant to take the exam, you know, whenever it's convenient for us and them, basically. So,
right.
Let's remove that section. But otherwise, looks like it does what it needs to do, and it's giving you the information that you have that you need. Is there any information that, you know, from having reviewed applications for licensure that you wish, man, I wish I had more information about this part of their education, background, or history, or are there items that you feel was completely unnecessary to have?
It's usable. I mean, is it perfect? No. Is it usable? Yes.
Okay. Okay. Similar for license renewal. This just outlines what has to be in the application itself for the license renewal. So that seems to be doing what we need also. I don't know.
Does that include provisions for the second license too?
Yeah. So again, here we're going to have to outline new requirements.
Yeah. Okay.
For practitioners.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, notice a change in contact information. The only thing I would say here is that they should also update us with their email address when it changes.
This was written before emails.
Correct, yeah. Experimental diagnoses and treatment. You know, this is not something that I've had any contact with yet. So I'm not sure, you know, how it actually operates in reality. So I'm not sure that I have any recommendations as far as changes in experimental diagnosis and treatment.
So are as homeopaths, are we only using remedies within the homeopathic pharmacopoeia?
No.
Oh, good. Wonderful. Keep rolling.
So, peer review section, this is in relation to the experimentation, experimental procedures, saying that those procedures would need to be peer reviewed in order to be, continue to be used.
Continue to be used? So if peer review says homeopathy is bogus, it mean we can't use it anymore?
No. This is just for the experimental procedures. So the for instance it has here is let's see here. Such as a vaccine therapy for cancer, right? So if they're doing a vaccine therapy for cancer without affiliation with a recognized research institution, the board may require review of the procedure by the board or a board appointed peer review committee. And so this is not an opportunity for an outside body to come in and say, well, I don't think that, you know, this or that modality is good medicine and that, you know, your licensees have to stop.
I gotcha.
Yeah. All right. Next section, chelation therapy practice requirement.
Sorry. So if one of our licensees wanted to do a therapy that's not explicitly listed, then we would consider this under this statute. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So what it is it's one of these items here. It's administration of a pharmaceutical agent untested for safety in humans, use of a physical agent or electromagnetic current or field in a manner not supported by established clinical usage, and therapy modalities and diagnostic methods that are not included in the practice of the homeopathic medicine as defined and do not meet the criteria of subsection C.
Understood.
All these items here.
Okay.
So,
can there not always be a provision for may make application to the board for permission to do such and such? I could see possibly one of our members getting involved in the Merck trial as a researcher, because Merck just came out with a vaccine for cancer, and they're probably in trial threes or four, probably in trial fours right now.
Mm-hmm.
So practitioners decided to be a PI on a Merck study for cancer for the vaccine.
Well,
I would think that requires special application to our board, and we'd probably approve it if it was Merck approved.
Right. Well, it would be a recognized research institution.
Okay.
So they wouldn't need to qualify under this section.
Okay.
So they'd be able to do that anyway.
Okay.
Great.
Yeah. All right. Chelation therapy practice requirements, that they, if they want to use it for anything other than metal poisoning, they need to document completion of the postgraduate education required, submit to the board patient consent forms that they're going to use, and protocols, and then keep records and analyze the results of the patients consistent with their protocols.
Okay.
This is for hearing and review of decisions by the board. So this is just outlines the administrative process a person needs to go through in order to review a decision of the board. If the board placed someone on probation or disciplined them or, you know, required, you know, continued education, whatever it might be, the board, a licensee would follow these provisions in order to have that reheard.
Those have been working.
Okay. We have historic use of title and abbreviation. This just outlines how the DOH, MDH is used and so on.
Is that going to be needed to adopt the homeopathic practitioner?
Yeah, we'll need to come up with some sort of abbreviation for homeopathic practitioner and add that in here.
But the doctor is doctor of homeopathy.
Right.
Yep. Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. Next section is the continuing education requirements. We require 20 hours of CE every year. I'm not sure what the board feels about the hours requirement, whether that's too much, too little. You know, every board.
Any complaints?
What's that?
Do you have complaints or do people turn it in?
No, I don't have any. I haven't had any complaints.
We'll leave it.
Okay. So these are all the items that would be included as continuing education. This 117 outlines how a body could apply to the board for approval of continuing education. It seems to be working just fine.
Great.
The audit for compliance and sanction for non-compliance with the continuing education requirement in 118. This, you know, I would like to change this. The way that it currently operates is what the board's supposed to do is let people know with the renewal notice that they need to submit their CE as part of the renewal application. What I found in other boards is that what this does in essence is incentivizes licensees to wait till the last moment and find out whether they're being audited or not. So what I'd like to do is separate it from the renewal process and just say that the board will provide a notice of audit and randomly sample licensees, and then we'll do it after the license has been renewed for the prior period.
Fine. Take out the loophole. See how you are?
That's me, unfortunately. Yeah. Again, these are definitions for dispensing. So if you want to go through those and make sure that that makes sense for those physicians that dispense.
We've never had any issues with that.
Not that I know of, no.
No, let's leave it. If it works, don't fix it.
Okay. Again, more information about dispensing over here. That they require a permit, so on and so forth.
Themselves or have remedies they self-concoct?
Homeopaths do that. I wouldn't say frequently, but yeah,
because that could be problematic if somebody's making a concoction without any basis. Just bringing up the terminology.
The directions are outlined in the Organon, and actually Hahnemann encourages homeopathic physicians to create them rather than relying on a pharmacist.
Okay. So just informationally, the dispensing section for medications is considering really only controlled substances, pharmaceuticals.
Oh, okay.
You know, it all.
Then it's a moot point.
Yeah, I mean. It also includes homeopathic medicines, right? Natural substances and non-prescription drugs, but the real issue is that for the controlled substances, we want to make sure they have a DEA registration, and we want to make sure that they're packaging it appropriately and safely so the patient knows what's in it and when to take it, right?
Yeah, that's the meat of it.
So
I can just see that would be a source of contention with the medical board if people were developing their own concoctions and selling them without any real quality control issues on them. I don't know how the language is, so I just brought it up under the dispensing. Usually one would dispense remedies that are already on the market, not things that you make up. So just a concern that I would be a little concerned if somebody was suddenly selling a homeopathic concoction for COVID that had never been looked at by anybody before.
Right. Well, it is part of the scope of homeopathic physicians to, you know, basically be able to manufacture homeopathic remedies. And so like classical homeopathic remedies. So that is something that our licensees can do. However, you are held responsible for, you know, what you say to your patients as far as, you know, what it's able to do and what it does, right? So
I could just imagine a complaint being filed by a allopathic doctor against one of our providers who was doing such, and I'd have a tough time defending it if there wasn't any base. I've been a principal investigator at 20 clinical trials in the past. I know what's required to prove that something is beneficial. So if it's part of the basic remedies of homeopathy, it's one thing. But if you combine this and this and this, and then all of a sudden sell it for X number of dollars.
Oh, no, we do single substances.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And that problem solved.
Great. Mm-hmm. All right, moving on.
All right, so, okay, so this next section is all about assistance. The rules, so our statutes allow either the practitioner or the physician to have an assistant, but the rules basically only consider that a physician would have an assistant. So we need to
say that again. Say that again.
Yeah, our statutes allow either license type to have a homeopathic medical assistant.
Mm-hmm.
But our rules only consider a homeopathic physician being allowed to have a homeopathic medical assistant. So that being the case, our rules are in conflict with our statute, and we need to update that.
Okay.
So that either license type.
It's just the language, repeating the language inside here.
Yeah. And so, you know, we need to, wherever it says homeopathic physician, we need to say homeopathic physician, or we need to just say a licensee, basically.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, so we'll just remove, you know, by homeopathic physicians or whatever, and we'll just add licensee in those areas.
Perfect.
Okay, again, here for supervising medical assistants, you know, that should all just say licensee instead of physician.
Mm-hmm.
So this is for those postgraduate courses. You know, the board can approve formal education programs for the post-secondary education. This is some of the ways that they can do that homeopathic repertorization procedures, nutrition counseling, neuromuscular integration, and so on.
Where does this stuff about Rolfing fall under? Which modality?
This, let's see.
Oh, neuromuscular?
Neuromuscular, yeah.
Oh, that's, so this that's great.
Yeah.
That could be in the definitions.
Yeah, this is, these are all modalities that our assistants would be doing.
But that should be in the definition, because we don't know that in the definition of neuromuscular integration.
So add,
we could. If we're listing it as a sub item here,
mm-hmm.
it should be listed in the definition, right?
Okay. Okay. I'll make sure all those are in the neuromuscular definition. So all these items here. And so this is the program. So this is if a person were to train their own homeopathic medical assistant, these are all the items that, I'm sorry, this is if a person wanted to put together a program to train homeopathic medical assistants, these are all the items that would have to be included in that program.
Do we have any?
We don't.
All right, move on.
Yep. If, let's see, the person can also train their own assistants, providing on-the-job practical education, and this outlines what would be required in that. It's pretty similar, but not exactly the same.
Have we had any issues with the current standing?
Not that I'm aware of.
Proceed.
Okay. Okay. This is just once again to review the requirements for the registration of a medical assistant. You know, we need to update it so that it says licensee instead of physician as a supervisor.
Yeah, that's across the board in the entire document.
Yeah. This is the application process for our medical assistants. Currently, our assistants have a renewal period that's January to December, no matter when they were registered. And so mm-hmm. they all expire in December every year. That seems to be working fine. I don't know if the board wants to do rolling renewals on that. There's not
Does
enough
that of them. Present a burden to the board, the staff?
No, there's not so many of them that it's a like a huge, you know, flood of applications at once. So I think leaving it the way it is probably fine.
Proceed.
Okay. If a person is licensed in another health profession, like acupuncture or massage therapy or whatever, there are additional requirements for registration as a medical assistant. This outlines what they are. I think that's been pretty standard.
You just pretty, document it, right? That's it.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, that's all on the form, I believe.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, we've had no issue with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, restrictions on delegated procedures. This is one I think you wanted to talk about. A homeopathic physician shall not delegate the following procedures to a registered medical assistant: psychotherapeutic procedures, including individual or group psychotherapy, clinical hypnosis, or other behavioral health interventions subject to independent regulation in the state, or dispensing substances, basically, and devices.
If they can show training, I mean, these people are already doing IVs at the doctor's office. If they can show training, I have no issue with it. But we have to document training.
So, yeah, all of our assistants, they're only able to do, so they have to have two things, our assistants. They have to, their supervisor has to have training in that modality. And then they need to have been trained in that modality in order to perform it.
Right.
So
that should be, I mean, that should go across the board.
So do our other board members have any issue with removing the restriction on like clinical hypnosis and, you know, psychotherapy for our assistants?
Well, I'm a little concerned about the hypnosis. That would be, you can get in a lot of trouble with hypnosis unless you really have thorough training.
There's no restrictions outside of this board. So if somebody wants to do clinical hypnosis in Arizona, they do not need a license. Trouble or not.
Huh. Okay.
I mean, so this has, it really has no teeth.
So I could, one well, of my family is, could just post a signal that said they're doing hypnosis. I would think that would be a problem, but I think most people would consider hypnosis part of a medical practice or a medical or a psychological practice.
Well, it's not whether most people do, it's whether the state of Arizona does.
So you can be a Tom, Dick, or Harry and post a shingle that you're a hypnotherapist and get paid?
Yeah.
All right.
There's no board of clinical hypnosis in the state of Arizona.
Okay, now, I didn't know that. Because I know the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis was very strict about their credentialing.
Yeah, but they're a society, they're not a licensing board. Yeah, if you want to be,
so I back down. I just think you can get in trouble doing hypnosis unless you know what you're doing.
Well, I agree. I totally agree. But the law is the law. And there are no laws regulating hypnotherapy in the state of Arizona.
Okay. We have the Assistant Attorney General on the line.
I would actually, I think this is kind of a bigger question than we're going to be able to answer in the meeting, and maybe Jeannie and I can look into, what the regulations are in Arizona for hypnosis, because there are, Dr. Fontes's point, there are, a lot of, shops out there, come on in for hypnosis will cure your, need to smoke or whatever, right? And so, is that, if it's different from clinical hypnosis, there might be a regulation for, clinical hypnosis versus just the, whatever regular hypnosis is. So we need to look into that, I guess.
Fair enough.
Is that something you could help me with, Jeannie, or?
Yeah. Excuse me. Yes.
Awesome. So we'll look into that. The registration isn't transferable, and so if a person were to have a medical assistant and then that medical assistant then changes to a different position, they have to, their registration expires and they have to go through the whole process again of proving education and applying to the board.
All right.
Responsibilities. Basically do only what they're allowed to do, wear something that says medical assistant on it.
And they're supposed to wear something?
Wear a clearly labeled name tag stating the designation medical assistant.
Oh my gosh.
So I don't know if that's necessary, honestly.
I don't think any of them in the state of the Arizona do that, so... I don't know if we need to do that. Otherwise, all of our...
The office needs to identify who their staff is and their positions. That didn't necessarily by a lanyard. But I think it could be done by a card.
Like a placard or something. Or like a wall certificate.
Or a staff photo or even a business card up front. Mm-hmm. So that they know who they're dealing with.
So we could have a, because they already get a certificate, right? So we could have
if they could post clearly
that their certificate
conspicuous conspicuous posting of this.
Yeah, I like that idea that you have to post the certificate in the walls, just like you would have to for some of the industrial health issues we have.
Okay, so we'll do that. All right, this defines unprofessional conduct for assistants, basically acting outside of the scope, and not listening to the supervisor for the most part. All right, these are some definitions that don't need any updating. This is the application requirements for the assistants. And includes what has to be in that application. This is what has to be in the renewal application. Again, I don't think any of that needs updating.
Yeah, we don't have any issues with our assistants, except for they're not wearing their name tags.
Yeah.
I'm going to send out the name tag police.
All right, I do have one thing here that I wanted to add. It's in the, let me see where this is, communication. Is there a communication, really?
Right there, D, at the top.
Yeah, I'm just, if it's a, okay, so if a license expires, a licensee shall immediately cease practicing homeopathic medicine, fine. A licensee whose license expires may obtain licensure only by complying again, which is with R438108, taking the examination again.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so my feeling is we can remove the requirement that they take the examination again. That requires that.
That's undue punishment.
So, yeah, I'm going to highlight that.
The punishment shall meet the crime.
Yeah.
David, it looks like Dr. Lim has left the meeting.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Her camera's on, but she left the room.
Okay, well, we'll pause. Thank you.
Are we going to take a few minute break or?
You only blocked out to 10.
Okay. Can they, are they bouncing?
I think we're just about done here.
Okay, let's call the meeting because we can't, I mean, I can't sit around and wait. Does this disappear?
Yeah.
So I'm going to call the meeting adjourned due to lack of participation.
Okay. So I'll.
Wouldn't use that term. That was just used for circumstances out of our control.
Yeah.
Something like that.
We lost a quorum, is the reason that the meeting adjourned.
Yeah, okay. Because we lost a quorum due to medical situation, whatever.
Okay. Have a great day.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
It's 10:17.
Hey, Mario, are you still on the line?
No, it looks like Dr. Fontes has.
All right. So, David, we all okay? Everything's okay?
Hold on. I'm going to stop the recording.